Y'all ready? Y'all ready?
Yeah.
Let's go. Come on.
Tiger Rag Radio is on the air.
Let's crank this thing up.
We're statewide, breaking down the latest happenings with LSU athletics.
This is us.
Hear from the coaches.
Here in Tiger Stadium on Saturday night, there is nothing like it.
The players.
We're having fun and we're working, baby. That's it, baby.
The recruits.
Show some passion and some heart.
And those who cover the Fighting Tigers of LSU and the SEC.
LSU is the best job in football.
It's 2 hours of nonstop LSU talk.
What a privilege. I mean, you get to represent LSU.
Tiger Rag Radio is brought to you by Cummins. Cummins creates power solutions that the world depends on. Louisiana Beef Industry Council. Boudreaux's Electrical Services. Sunshine Quality Solutions. Super Chevy Dealers. And Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. Get ready to talk Tigers with producer Andre Champagne and our host, Todd Horn, Jeff Palermo, and Glenn Gilbo.
Two great players that are better people than they are players.
This is Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Good evening. Welcome to Tiger Rag Radio. This is Glenn Gilbo, Tiger Rag Editor, with Tiger Rag Executive Editor Todd Horn and producer Andre Champagne. Jeff Palermo is actually doing the LSU McNeese State baseball game tonight that has its first pitch at 6:30 at Alex Box, so he's not going to be with us. Jeff did a great job over the weekend at the Jacks College Baseball Classic that the Tigers basically ripped everybody over there. Notre Dame, Indiana, and who was the third team?
UCF.
Central Florida. And we're going to talk to John Eads in a second. John was at that tournament in Jacksonville, Florida.
So, Glenn, when you say that Jeff's doing the baseball
game. He's announcing the baseball game.
Play-by-play.
He's doing the play-by-play of the game.
And he did the play-by-play, all three games in Jacksonville.
Yes, well, I think our audience understands
that. Well, I just wanted to clarify, yeah.
Okay.
And he did a great job, by the way.
Maybe you ought to take a break and clarify some things.
I should, yeah.
No, that's true. Jeff Palermo is a great play-by-play announcer. He was filling in for Chris Blair, who was doing basketball. And, boy, all the power to Chris Blair for having to go through those basketball games. But they got a great chance of winning tomorrow night. There's a story on that on TigerRag.com right now. They play Ole Miss. LSU is in last place in the SEC, and Ole Miss is tied for second to last at 3-11, LSU's 2-12. But LSU's going to have a chance to win that game. And let me tell you the other guests tonight. We're going to have Scott Rabelais is going to be with us at 6:30. He was also at the tournament in Jacksonville, but he's mainly going to talk about gymnastics with us. And then Mike Dettillier from WWL Radio, draft expert. He's going to be on at 7 to discuss the LSU Tigers that are at the Combine right now as we speak, including Garrett Nussmeier. And then Reed Darcy from The Advocate is going to join us at 7:30, and we're going to talk about some LSU women's basketball. But right now, WAFB travel man, he went to Omaha, he went to Jacksonville. John Eads is with us. John, how are you?
Doing well, guys. Appreciate y'all having me. Good to be back in Baton Rouge after a nice trip out to Jacksonville there.
So where are you hiding in the press box right now out at Alex Box?
Under the press box. I'm in the stairwell that you could take up to the press box. A little bit quieter in here. So this is usually where I keep my stuff. You know, it's a little hideaway for me.
Cool. You recovered from that 10-hour drive to Jacksonville and back?
You could say that. You know, I made sure to go to bed early yesterday, and I'm just glad I made it back in one piece. You know, that I heard that drive is pretty boring, and it was a little more exciting on the way there than it was on the way back. I'll just say that.
All I-10, man. All I-10.
Yeah, all I did crazy. All I-10. Right.
What was your impressions from being there of the LSU baseball team, the offense, the pitching? Just what were some of your takeaways?
Yeah, I was impressed. I mean, I didn't really know what to expect from some of the other teams, like their programs that typically kind of hover around, you know, the NCAA tournament and stuff. But I wouldn't say they're like story programs. You know, in the past, LSU has played Texas. They played UL. In Texas there, and this year was kind of just three teams that were kind of similar. You know, people don't really know what to expect from them. They have some good pieces, but LSU just dominated, and they really dominated each game in a different way. You know, I mean, they didn't dominate every single inning, but when you look at the final scores and the way that the games ended up, I mean, they were clearly the best team there. So it was really a lot of what we had already seen to this point against some lesser competition, but it was nice to see that in three games consecutively against Power Four teams. I mean, the lineup is just unbelievable, the way they are patient at the plate, but also there's no breaks in there. Like at any given time at the start of any inning, you almost think that they're at the top of the order, you know, the way that they're able to get guys on base and produce. I thought the starters all took a step forward. I mean, they had their issues here and there, nothing too big. I think the main theme and takeaway thus far is that they don't need to be as good as they were last year from a pitching standpoint, at least to start the game, because this offense, I think, is better. You know, it's deeper, and they have way more guys that can match up and substitute into a game, pinch hit, whatever, and execute right away. So I was really impressed. People forget Jay Johnson had never started a season 6-0, and here they are at 8-0 with a chance to get to 9 this evening.
Yeah, and John, Sean Stifler, the Notre Dame coach, I was really impressed by something he said after they lost to LSU. He was amazed at how patient the Tigers were at the plate. He says they don't swing. You know, they don't swing unless it's like a perfect pitch or something. Have you noticed that as well?
I have, yeah. I mean, it sounds so simple, but it's so true. You know, I mean, every single at-bat, they're making you work. I mean, that's what made Derek Curiel so good as a freshman, is that every single time he was at the plate, you could expect probably at least 8 pitches, because he was going to foul some off, he was going to see some in, and they were doing that against everybody, just putting so much pressure on the opposing pitchers to work, you know. And it was really eye-opening to hear all three of the coaches compliment LSU, especially its offense, just for, you know, how much firepower it has and what it does to an opposing dugout. And it's really impressive. It's nice to hear that from another coach who has more expertise than I do, or really any of us do, just to kind of get their 2 cents on it. That was a very eye-opening quote, though. But it's true. I mean, they walked 15 times, I think it was, against Notre Dame there on Saturday, if I'm not mistaken. One of the games, they walked 15 times. The program record is 16, dating back at least 30 years from what I gathered. So, and that's been an every game thing. I mean, they're not walking 15 times a game, but they're getting key walks at key moments in the game, which is extending innings and giving more guys a chance at the plate. And there's so many different guys that can really do damage, hit the ball to all fields with all kinds of power. And then not to mention, when they just kind of stick to their approach and stick to their game plan, they're very dangerous. You know, I mean, you look at some of these innings, they're putting up 4 runs consistently. They put up 9 in a single inning against Indiana. I mean, the game can really change at any given time. You know, even if you're losing, winning, whatever it is, it can get away from you quickly.
Hey, John, this is Todd. 2 things that you said. First of all, I'm going to qualify you as a baseball guy, and so you can explain this to us and to the fans that are listening. When you say that Notre Dame, and it was the Notre Dame game when LSU walked 15 times, I think the first thing that most people think is, well, they sucked at pitching. Notre Dame must have sucked at pitching. But that's not necessarily the case. It was the discipline that LSU showed at the plate. The other thing is when you talk about LSU being 8-0 at this time, there's a lot of people that say, well, yeah, they hadn't really played anybody. Notre Dame might be a big name, but they're not really that good. Indiana, you know, and but neither one of those things are true. Notre Dame wasn't bad at pitching, and LSU, they may not have played an SEC caliber opponent yet, but they're not playing terrible teams right now. So how is this going to carry over into the season, in your opinion, what they're doing right now?
Well, it'll be more difficult. You're going to see better pitching, you know, or you'll see pitching that'll put a little bit more stress on you. Guys that can put pitches in difficult spots that are going to put umpires in a difficult position to call a ball or a strike. I mean, that's going to test their ability to walk like they are and have that kind of plate discipline and avoid kind of being pressured, you know, and feel like they have to have the big swing. But I think it is very translatable, if that's a word, to SEC play, just because they're so deep. And if someone's not performing or they want to take somebody out to match up with a guy on the mound, I mean, they have an unlimited amount of options. I mean, Tanner Reeves is a very good batter. He hasn't played recently because he struggled a bit defensively and stuff, but he's someone they can always go to. John Pearson, every time he comes to the plate, he's getting hits. He's a guy that I think is starting tonight but hasn't started every single game. Daniel Harden, a lot of people are excited about on the bench. He's getting a couple opportunities here and there. Like, they have more options, I think, and more ways to solve puzzles than they did last year. And that's where I think it'll help them once they get into conference play. And then not to mention, we haven't talked about the pitching much. I mean, their bullpen is very deep. Like this weekend, they didn't even use a lot of the guys they're going to rely on this year. I hope we're I figure we're going to see some of them tonight because they got to throw some innings at some point. They didn't have to this weekend, but this bullpen's going to win them a lot of games too, just because the same reason they're so deep and they're not going to put too much pressure on guys. They're going to have small roles for them. And if they execute those roles well, then this team will succeed. So I think everything they're doing is something they can continue to do for all 56 games and then into the postseason. Obviously they're not going to go 56-0, but I feel like the brand of ball that they play is something they can consistently execute.
You know, you brought up pitching and you were talking about the relief pitchers, primarily the bullpen, but the starting pitching is still a question mark. I mean, Cason Evans did a good job this weekend. William Schmidt on the back end on the third game against UCF did a great job, probably his best job pitching as a Tiger. He still hadn't lost a game, knock on wood. But I think this was arguably his best game, best performance as a Tiger. And then, of course, Cooper Moore, the transfer from what, Kansas. Yeah, do we have three starters for LSU right now, in your opinion?
I think so. And, you know, people are going to immediately go to Paul Skenes and Floyd and Cade Anderson and Anthony Eidson, Gage Jump, et cetera, but those guys don't really need to be those caliber of starting pitchers this year, I don't think. I mean, Jay said it after the Indiana game. If Cason pitches the way he did against Indiana, obviously you'd like him to be a little bit sharper. That's fine. If the offense is going to execute and play the way that it is, it'll pick up some of the slack for him. Last year, maybe it was a little bit more of the pitching picking up the offense at times. I think we'll see the inverse this year. The offense will kind of carry some of the mantle for the pitching. So they don't need to be like super dominant, but if they are, that's great. If they are, then you'll see what we saw on Sunday where LSU run ruled UCF in seven innings because Schmidt pitched five shutout innings, you know, and Cooper Moore was very quick and efficient for four of his or five of his 5 2/3, I think it was, innings on Saturday against Notre Dame. So I've liked what I've seen. They've improved on some things each week, and they don't really need to give you seven or eight innings of shutout baseball for LSU to be successful just because their offense is so potent thus far.
Talking to John Eads from WAFB on the Super Chevy Dealer Studio. Sorry about that. I wanted to ask you, who really strikes you out of the bullpen over the weekend?
I think Devin Sheeran's a guy that sticks out immediately. His first inning wasn't great. Struggled with command, wasn't finding the zone. But then once he did, he worked himself out of the trouble he put himself in with, I believe, the bases loaded or a lot of traffic on the base paths. He was able to get the outs he needed to get out of the inning. And then in the next one, I'm pretty sure he struck out the side. Like, nobody could touch him. So when Devin Sheeran is dialed in and he's throwing strikes and hitting the zone, nobody can touch him. That was very impressive to me. I thought Ethan Plogg also did a pretty good job. He's a guy that pitched in JUCO ball last year, has all the ability to be successful at LSU. What I've been told is that it's kind of just a mental thing with him and a confidence thing. And I thought he took a step this past weekend. He was in some high leverage situations. They really wanted him to get an out in a lefty-lefty matchup, and he did it. And then they pulled him and put Sheeran in, so that was good. Obviously, you got to like what you've seen from Maverick Rizzi. He closed out that game against UCF, had a strikeout and maybe a walk in there or two, but nobody else could really hit him. And then Gavin Guidry, I mean, we got to talk about Gavin Guidry. Nobody can touch this guy. He's been brought in for some very high leverage situations. He's the guy that LSU is going to rely on to get the key outs all season, in my opinion, even in the postseason, just like they have in the past. And he's picked up right where he's left off and done well. I mean, he struggled a little bit against Indiana, but limited the damage, I thought, for the situation that he was brought into. So those are some of the guys that are sticking out. I know I'm probably forgetting a few. Reagan Ricken last week against Nichols went three innings, I believe. And
John, you're naming the whole team. You're naming the whole team.
I know. Well, that's the thing. The bullpen's that deep, so I can go through and give you a whole list. But I'll cut it there. Those are the guys, I'd say.
All right, John, any score yet at the box?
No score. Okay. The game coming up in 14 minutes.
Oh, that's
People
right.
People are kind of concerned about this one, though. The LSU's kind of struggled with the first game back from these road trips they take early in the season, so we'll see how it goes tonight.
All right, thanks for joining us, John Eads, WAFB. We'll be back with more Tiger Rag Radio right after this.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to... Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with five available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious... With multiple engine options and impressive towing. While Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability.
Nice.
Making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your super Chevy dealers today.
Back to Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
Welcome back to Tiger Rag Radio. Glenn Gilbo here, Tiger Rag Editor, with Tiger Rag Executive Editor Todd Horn and Andre Champagne, producer. We're talking about the schedule. LSU has McNeese State tonight, and then they play Dartmouth on Friday, and then Northeastern Saturday, Dartmouth Sunday, Northeastern Monday, and then ULL. And really, none of those teams are that good, though. Northeastern did go to the regional last year, but they're not that good this year. Then they have a weekend series against Sacramento State. Then it's Creighton, and then they go to Vanderbilt. So it's really, it's not a great schedule. But it's a decent schedule, and they did play Kent State. Which beat Tennessee 2 out of 3.
On the road.
On the road.
In Knoxville.
Yeah. And but I think what's going to be the big test when the SEC starts, I mean, I think LSU's going to hit fine against everyone, but we'll see how that pitching is with Cason Evans, Cooper Moore, and William Schmidt, because that's going to be a better barometer. Of course, at this time last year and through the early part of the SEC, we weren't too sure about the first two pitchers, Cade Anderson and Anthony Ianson, and then they ended up being – that was the best 1-2 starter
combination
in the country.
And they were 1-3 in number one and number three in
strikeouts. Right.
With Anderson being number one, of course, and Ianson being number three. But, I think what John said, John Eads, who was just with us, I think that's true. I think that the starting pitchers for LSU this year have looked decent. They haven't looked nearly as strong as Anderson and Ianson last year. But they don't have to pitch.
Yeah, they have more offense.
And they have more depth.
I think they have a wider assortment of effective relevers this year than last. So they're pretty good out of the pen last year. But, I mean, the two guys that missed last year with injuries, Gavin Guidry, almost called him Waylon Guidry, who was on the 0-1 team, and Devin Sheeran. I mean, those two guys, that was two really good guys they lost last year who appeared – definitely Gavin, and Devin appears to be getting back into form too.
Who's starting tonight just for LSU?
Marco Paz is starting tonight.
So he's a freshman, and he's coming off of the arm injury from his junior year. And he's done well in, how many innings? Probably about 5 innings total so far this year combined?
Yeah, he's had limited time. I think he didn't throw this weekend, but he threw a little bit against Milwaukee on that third day.
Yeah, so Jay's really high on him. Jay and Nate Yeske both are really high on him. As basically, Jay's guaranteeing that Paz is going to be a SEC starter by the time his career is over here, and of course, it's just getting started. That's the thing, Glenn and Andre, that really gets me about this team. It's just the depth. It's quality depth. It's not just they got bodies, warm bodies they can throw in. They got bodies that are contributing, whether they're being thrown in 1-9 in the lineup to pinch hit because of a matchup, whether it's a pitcher coming in with a certain matchup out of the bullpen to take down, left-handers or right-handers, whatever it is. They just have depth. And position players, one of those games, I'm not sure which one it was in Jacksonville, if I'm not mistaken, they played 15 regular position players played in one game.
Well, they had a lot of depth last year, and they do have more depth this year, but they had an incredible amount of depth last year. So that's quite a statement. It gives him a lot of option. He's got a lot of left-handed hitters, and there's nothing he can't do, and he's really got good last year at knowing when to pinch hit people and when to put in pitchers. And I think the key for LSU over these next few games is to try – maybe they can't try to do this, but it would help their pitching if they didn't win by 10-run rule.
Yeah, you know, so they get more activity out of the bullpen.
Yeah, because he didn't get to use all the pitchers he wanted to use over the weekend. So maybe he's got to hold some of those bats back. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that you know he's not gonna hold them back in order to do that because that's just not in his DNA. But I'm sure he would appreciate the ability to have some extended games, not extra innings, but you know full 9-inning games instead of like you said run ruling them. But speaking of that though, what? You know, they're 8-0 now. The schedule you just ran off. I mean, Vanderbilt's not that good this year, or at least they hadn't been so far. They were supposed to be good, but they're not at this point. So conceivably, knock on wood again, LSU could be unbeaten after the first SEC series, which would put them at 21-0 this year. And how many games did they win last year in a row? So that would be like 29. If they got to 21-0 right now, didn't they win like 8 last year in a row to end the season?
But the record for opening a season is 19-0, done by the 97 team, and they'll have to win the first game at Vanderbilt to do that. We're going to be back right after this. We're going to talk to Scott Rabelais a little bit about baseball because he was in Jacksonville as well, and we're going to dive into gymnastics. We'll have more Tiger Rag Radio right after this.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with 5 available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious. With multiple engine options and impressive towing, while Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability.
Nice.
Making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your super Chevy dealers today.
I'm Richard Fontenot, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. My brother and I grow rice, soybeans, and raise crawfish on our farm in Evangeline Parish. For a fourth-generation farmer like myself, Louisiana Farm Bureau is as much a part of my life as checking traps or harvesting rice. Our organization is more than 145,000 members strong, and we've been around for more than 100 years. The Louisiana Farm Bureau spans generations, and we want you to join our family.
Visit LAFarmBureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
And we're back with Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Hello, welcome back to Tiger Rag Radio. This is Glenn Gilbo with Todd Horn and Andre Champagne. The LSU, number two LSU gymnastics team, went to number one Oklahoma last Friday and fell 198.125 to 197.925.
That was close. That was the highest point total LSU's had on the road this season.
Wow. And LSU sophomore Kalen Chio claimed their sixth all-around title and earned 210 scores on the beam and vault.
That doesn't happen often.
Does not happen often. And we have a sound bite from Kalen we're going to go to right now.
Well, what's funny about that is I think that was actually my worst vault I think I've done of the 5 others that I stuck. So I was actually just like more like, I don't know. Like I think that vault, like I wanted it. I've been wanting it for so long, but it was just funny that it came on that one instead of like all the other ones.
So she got a 10 and she's criticizing the officials.
Well, the thing is on the vault, like she says, she has had that was her sixth consecutive stick when landing on the vault, and it was her worst one of the last 6 or
that's
last
amazing.
5. Let's ask Scott Rabelais. He was there covering that event.
Scott, have you ever been in a gymnastics meet where one gymnast had 2 tens in the same meet?
Yes. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah, Haley Bryant, 2 years ago in the podium challenge at the River Center, started 10-10 on vault and bars. So you look up and she had a 20.
Wow.
So I took a picture of it and tweeted. So this doesn't happen. I'm taking a picture because this doesn't happen very often. So, yeah, it's very difficult. I was not at the meet in Oklahoma. I was at the I was at the
in Jacksonville.
In Jacksonville.
Right.
But I was at the previous all home meet, and I'll be at the Nationals, you know, assuming they make it, which I think they will. It's rare to have two tens, no question. Very rare.
I bet you that you were watching the gymnastics meet from Jacksonville in your hotel room or the hotel bar.
Yes. Covered the baseball game, raced back to the hotel, watched it on TV, wrote a on deadline story. It was a little hairy. Friday was a long day in Jacksonville.
Okay.
But we got it done. She's the first gymnast in the country this year to have two tens in one meet.
Wow.
So you know what's cool about that? You mentioned Haley Bryant. Haley Bryant, of course, is coaching LSU right now, and she's always the most visible coach whenever Chio and not just Chio, but all the performers, but especially I notice it when Chio finishes, like, you know, sticks her vault or mm-hmm. does a good beam routine. It's always Haley right there to greet them and put the crown on their head or et cetera, whatever they do. That's got to be pretty cool to watch that traditional handoff, especially for you since you've been so close to this program for so long.
Well, it's wonderful that she's still part of the program. I think she's a great person, and in addition to being an all-time great gymnast, maybe the greatest gymnast LSU's ever had to this point. It's how Kaylin Chio does for her whole career. But all the coaches, Jay Clark, Courtney, and Garrett Griffith, and Haley Bryant, they all have a kind of a specialty. Jay specializes in bars, Garrett vault, Courtney floor, and Haley does beam. So she's right there. And she's right there when they're performing on beam. So yeah, she's usually the first one to give somebody a hug. She took Ashley Natt's place. She decided to leave coaching after last season. So replacing one all-time great with another. But yeah, it's really wonderful to still see her part of the team. And she's I'm going to do a story at some point this season. She's relatable to the players, the gymnasts, because they've just been competing with each other. And now she knows what it's like. And in recruiting, she's a huge plus. She's had an amazing recruiting class that they just signed. And when she goes into the home, I mean, these young gymnasts are starstruck.
Right.
Haley Bryant is coming to her house, you know, because they've seen her perform for 5 years, you know, for LSU. So, she's been quite an asset to them as a gymnast and now as a coach.
Well, Scott, when most people look and they say, oh, well, number two LSU against number one Oklahoma and LSU loses, it was close, but they lost. Most people tend to think, oh, well, that must mean Oklahoma's better than LSU. But I would argue that especially given LSU's injury situation during that meet, that for LSU to even be that close – just really points to LSU having a strong, strong opportunity to win another national championship this year.
Well, they do. These two teams were in a four-team meet to start the season out in Salt Lake City, the Sprouts Collegiate Quad, and they tied, 197-5, which is also a rare thing. The ties do happen in gymnastics. So they tied. Oklahoma's average has been just a little bit better than LSU's. LSU's, has been right there. One team is ranked number one, like on one event, like vault for Oklahoma, and LSU's ranked number one on floor and things like that. It's LSU. Yeah, didn't have Connor McClain. She hurt her forearm on bars in warmups. We'll see if she can compete this week against Alabama at home. Didn't have Kalia Lincoln on floor. She's a tremendous floor. Has a tremendous floor routine. She's her Achilles is acting up, and that's when Achilles can often go, is when you're doing floor. That's when they often get ruptured. And still they lost by 0.2. And that means in Baton Rouge, LSU probably would have won. You know, I'm not saying because of the judging or anything. I'm just saying, you know, the home arena advantage, it's a real thing. And LSU beat them here last year. The only thing that's off the table for LSU is probably the regular SEC regular season title. They still have the championship meet, which everyone feels like is more – that's going to be in Tulsa in Oklahoma's backyard in March, and then the, of course, Nationals in Fort Worth in April. So they will meet again, very, very certainly, although they didn't meet in the final the last 2 years. but at NCAAs. But it's likely not the last chapter between the Tigers and Sooners. And LSU could, they got to be good, but they could win. They could win, yeah, definitely.
Hey, Andre, let's do this. Let's play Jay Clark talking about how proud he was of LSU's effort at Oklahoma, and then let Scott comment on that, and then we'll go to a break. And Scott, if you can join us, we'll come back after the break and talk more about that, and we'll talk about some football too.
Okay. All right.
We competed hard. You know, I knew we would go and compete hard. We had to make some adjustments, and you know, not having Connor on anything and pulling Khalil on floor, and but the kids that went in handled it, and that's the important part to the whole story. Is that you go out there, you lose by 0.2. You get on a neutral floor, and we get all guns blazing. We'll be in a good spot. So I feel good about what we did. The kids were just matter of fact about it. They, you know, when we made the changes and put people in, I think Zeiss mentioned that she went in the sixth spot when we realized that Kalia was not going to go. They just were matter of fact, and that's good. That's the mark, I hope, of a team that's mature and that understands what we're asking of them and handles those things, because circumstances can change quickly.
All right, that was LSU gymnastics coach Jay Clark after the close loss to Oklahoma. We're going to take a break in a second. Rab, before we go to break, can you give us a quick update on Connor McLean and Kalia Lincoln for the next meet?
I think it's a little day to day on both of them. Like I said, the arm injury for McLean hit it on one of the uneven bars, which is, you know, for those rather painful, but not something that should be a season ending thing. Lincoln is something, you know, they let her do it, but she don't want to do floor because that's like I said, that's where the Achilles could go. And he said it's not worth it, any kind of dual meet, you know, a regular season meet. So they're hoping to get Lincoln back this weekend on floor, but again, they have to see how practice goes during the week. So Monday was way too early to tell.
Scott,
all right, we're going to take a quick break. Right now. We're going to take a break right now, and we'll be back with more Scott Rabelais and more Tiger Rag Radio right after this.
Let's go. We now return to Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Hello, welcome back to Tiger Rag Radio with Glenn Gilbo, Todd Horn, and Andre Champagne. And we're talking to Scott Rabelais from the Baton Rouge Advocate about LSU gymnastics team, which hosts number 3 Alabama Friday night at the Assembly Center. Is that at 7 or 8, Andre?
That's at 8.
8 p.m. Friday night.
Oh, 8:30.
So, 8:30.
Hey, Scott, yeah. 8 is at 8:30. Alabama started the season, preseason. They were number 8. They've had a NQS so far of 197.570. They're ranked 3rd. Big challenge this weekend for the Tigers?
Yeah, I mean, it is virtually every time you have an SEC dual meet. I mean, the top 4 teams in the country are SEC teams: Oklahoma, LSU, Alabama, Florida, then Georgia, Missouri, Arkansas at 6, 7, 8. Only 2 teams are Auburn's 15. And then Kentucky's kind of having an off season, but they just had one of their better scores. So yeah, they're a really good team. You know, they're Alabama's always been one of the traditional powers. It's been a long time since they've won a national title, but and then they're going to compete Sunday in the Podium Challenge at the River Center. It's going to be LSU, Alabama, Arizona, and North Carolina. And Podium means they're going to put the events on elevated platforms, which is softer actually than just being on the floor of the arena, like they'll be in the PMAC Friday night, which is what they'll do at SEC, which is what they will do at the NCAA championships. And there's a lot of screwy things about college gymnastics. And one of the screwy things is this will count as a road score
right,
for LSU.
Right, right. And that's important.
And that's important. Right. That's a very important to get good road scores. So, that's why LSU does this meet. So, it'll be a good one. Gabby Glido, it sounds like a girl. She should be at LSU. She's a top 10 all arounder for Alabama, and so she's highly ranked on floor and in a couple of events. So they've got a good team, and they'll push LSU for sure. Wow. But again, it's gymnastics. If you do a good score like LSU did on the road, and you come up a little short, it's not the end of the world.
Right.
And so it's all about the scoring.
So the I'm sure there'll be a capacity crowd at the PMAC on Friday night at 8:30 to watch LSU and Alabama go at it, number two and number three in the country right now. But I doubt there'll be 44,000 people because they won't. 44,000 wouldn't fit in the Assembly Center in the PMAC, and yet that's how many tickets, season tickets, Lane Kiffin has sold in football to start out the season. At least that's what it was last week. It may be up above 50 by now at the rate it was accelerating. Have you ever seen Tiger land, Scott, this excited about an upcoming football season?
You know, it's hard to say that you have. I mean, there's been a lot of seasons where there was a lot of anticipation for, and there was anticipation last year, obviously, with the transfer portal class they signed, and with Garrett Nussmeier coming back, and there was a little more cautious optimism or nervous anticipation. This is like, I think everybody is like, Lane's here and they're going to win and all the games. And that's probably not realistic. I mean, now you have a collection of talent and that's great, but you got to make a team now. You got to build chemistry with a lot of guys who have not played. The vast majority of the guys have not played together. So, but yeah, I can understand the excitement. And it's just a great schedule, right? I mean, Clemson coming here for the very first time. Texas is coming to Tiger Stadium for the first time since 1953.
Were you at that game?
I was not. Both of you guys are older than me. So
it is an amazing schedule, though, Rab, because I remember when I first read some stories about the schedule, the Alabama game was barely mentioned.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, exactly. I think it's Alabama and Texas back-to-back, and, of course, obviously in the new nine-game SEC schedule, it's going to create more of these kind of matchups. And, you know, Texas was supposed to come in 2020, and they didn't because they went to an all-SEC schedule because of COVID. And now, and of course, you know, coming back with Arch Manning. I mean, it's just – the whole thing is just – I'm excited for it now. I mean, obviously, we're just here in late February and looking forward to how women's basketball turns out and gymnastics and all these can LSU go to the College World Series again. But it's very exciting, and I understand why the ticket sales are brisk. And they're going to be a fun team to watch. I don't think they're going to win every game. But I think they're going to be exciting on offense. And, with Blake Baker back running the defense and some good pieces coming back, I think they have a chance to have a really good team.
Well, let's talk about that offense for a second because I'm willing to make a bet right now. Let's do a little fun bet with the four of us. Andre, you weigh in on this. LSU did not score 25 points or more in a single game, Power Four game last season. I predict they will score 25 points or more in the very first game of this season against Clemson. What you guys say?
I mean, I think that's a safe bet right there.
Okay, so you agree with Clemson. Scott?
Yeah, I do. I think, it could be a couple little creaks and, things that got to work out with the offense, to start the season. Because again, bringing all these pieces from all these different places. But yeah, if I had to pick over under, I'm going to take over that. Yes,
Glenn.
I think they'll score 25 or more
against Clemson.
Yes.
All right. So we all think they're going to open with a much more powerful offense than they had last year, and that's because of Sam Levitt, Jordan Seaton, Lane Kiffin.
The offensive genius, the first offensive coordinator, true offensive coordinator ever hired at LSU as head coach.
That's right.
Jerry DiNardo and Les Miles were offensive coordinators at one time, but they were not
legitimate
offensive geniuses. Hey, Scott, thanks a lot for joining us.
Anytime, guys. Always a pleasure. Thanks.
All right, appreciate it. We'll be back with more Tiger Rag right after this.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with 5 available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious with multiple engine options and impressive towing. While Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability,
nice,
making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your super Chevy dealers today.
Now more Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
Welcome back to Tiger Rag Radio. Glenn Gilbo here, Tiger Rag editor with executive editor of Tiger Rag, Todd Horn, and producer, writer, broadcast journalist, man of many talents, Andre Champagne.
Big Papa. Big Papa had a two-run homer just now.
Oh, it's 2-0 LSU already. Wow.
And it was a blast. I mean, he didn't even look like he swung very hard.
Big Papa, Zach York, yes. So you call him Big Papa because there's some other nicknames of him. The Cajun.
The Bayou Bambino. I've heard.
I like Bayou Bambino because he looks like Babe Ruth. He's on the Bayou.
I've heard York Chop, which is a good one, like pork chop.
Yeah, but that doesn't really mean home runs, though.
No.
I think Bayou Bambino, Big Papa, you've had a bunch of them. I think Bayou Bambino is the one.
That's what we're going to use.
I'm
going to call him Babe Ruth.
Well, speaking of Babe Ruth, Lane Kiffin has come into LSU, much like Babe Ruth went to the Yankees. So what do you think he's going to average all season? You think he's going to average 25, 28 points a game all season?
No, I think that they're going to be closer to 40.
40 points.
Take your Ole Miss offense this past year and transplant it into Baton Rouge, because it's basically going to be the same thing, especially if they get the chemistry right, which is why this spring is actually a very important spring practice, especially because they're going to have to get their, you know, Hassan Longstreet and I never can remember Landon Clark. Is that the other quarterback's name? Because Sam Leavitt is not going to be able to go full speed in the spring. So they're going to have to get all three of those quarterbacks up. And as you pointed out today, Glenn, and actually several times, Trinidad Chambliss wasn't even a name that anybody knew last spring.
Right.
Yeah, Austin Simmons was supposed to be the guy for the longest time. And then Trinidad came in week three against Tulane, and they were like, well, here we go.
And Lane and Charlie Weiss Jr. only had him since the summer, and they had to put that offense together on the fly, and that tells you something about how talented those two dudes are. And Trinidad, even if Sam Leavitt is healthy, I don't think Sam is going to be quite the runner Trinidad is. Ole Miss averaged about 34 points a game last year, if I'm not mistaken. I don't think LSU is going to be up in the 40s, but I think they could be in the high 20s, low 30s. And it's going to be interesting. And, you know, I think obviously Sam's injury could be key, but I think most of his yards and most of his damage is going to come from his arm, obviously. And Mox had the same injury, and in 2003 he may have been in some pain.
Who's Mox?
Matt Mock. But, I mean, he was still – excellent quarterback, even with that injury. Maybe Levitz is a little worse than Matt's, but we're going to try to get in touch with Matt for a Tiger Rag issue coming up to talk about that. But it's going to be a great season, even if they do lose three games, which I think would be that's probably, I think, the most people expect them to lose. But you know, with a 9-game SEC schedule, what I'm saying is, even if they lose, they're going to be fun to watch.
I agree they're going to be fun to watch, but I don't think they're going to lose three games.
Andre?
I think three games is on the dot for sure, but my thing is three games get you in the playoffs at this
point.
Especially when a college football committee is looking at, you know, who are the losses against. I think LSU's, their losses aren't going to be against a Vanderbilt, you know, or like whoever else they have to play. I think it's going to be against...
Well, Vanderbilt was good last year.
They were, but they weren't, you know, the highest level of an SEC loss.
You guys, man, which three games do you think they're going to lose?
I'm not sure yet, but okay. I don't get into which teams they lose. I just know that they might lose that many games. But we have to take another break, and we're going to come back with Mike Dettillier from WWL Radio and talk about the LSU football players at the Combine in Indianapolis. We'll be back with more Tiger Rag Radio right after this.